For this story, we sat down with Anamari Kause, the president of the University of Washington. But we weren't talking about university business. Instead, Dr. Kause shared something much more personal. It's about how an unexpected loss can leave us shattered and struggling to piece our lives back together. In Kause's case, it's about her brother, Cesar, and what happened to him on a November day in North Carolina in 1979. Before that, Kause and her brother had a pretty typical, loving, if rough and tumble, relationship.
Every scar in his body was probably given to him by me. I can remember him particularly. He had a scar over his mouth where I kicked him in the mouth, not on purpose. He was in the front seat. I was in the back seat. He did some kind of name calling, and so I went to kick the back of the seat. He turned around, and I caught his tooth. So I have a scar here. That's where he threw me into a table.
Eyebrow there.
Yeah, you know, we were rivals at times, but, you know, he was very much a classic big brother in the sense of he was, you know, protective of me. I was kind of the geeky one. I think it was really when he went to college that I started seeing him developing as more of an intellectual. And he'd come home and, you know, share books and things that he was reading. He actually studied Latin American history. That was when we really started talking more about problems in the world, you know, staying up for hours and talking about, you know, how the world could be a better place.
And how did Cesar get involved in the organizing and activism work?
He was headed towards graduate school, but he very much did not want to be what he called an armchair radical. And so he did defer admissions and, you know, got involved in political activism.
So
and he was a union organizer.
Yeah, and he was working specifically with textile workers, right?
Yes, yes. I mean, you know, and there was a real issue there. Very, very difficult working conditions, low wages. And in the South, if you are trying to organize workers to see their common cause, you run into the white-black split because it's all about how do you get folks to see common cause. And so you run into the Klan. Was he aware that when they called a rally, that they did use the nomenclature death to the Klan? Did he think people were going to come with shotguns and shoot people? I don't know.
So this rally kind of appeared on the horizon. Can you give us a little bit of background to the extent that you have it at
your fingertips? I think that, like I say, they had run into the Klan. And, you know, I think it was the idea of the organization, and I don't know whether it was his or, you know, how it had come about, that they needed to make a show that they weren't scared of the Klan because they wanted the people not to be scared of the Klan. And, you know, I think we need to understand that, you know, the Klan did have involvement with the police. The police knew when the parade was happening and all the reporters were there and the police weren't. It was a massive failure in terms of justice. But, you know, five young people were murdered.
A caravan of Klan and Nazi members, 9 cars to be exact, arrived on the scene.
And people got out of the 9th car, came up to the 8th car, retrieved long weapons, looked like shotguns.
A gun battle started, and 5 Communist Workers Party members who were part of that anti-Klan rally were shot dead.
I wasn't there. I was actually in New Haven, and I was with some friends. You know, we were talking about maybe, you know, playing Monopoly or playing some board games, etc., when my mother calls, and she was very confused about what had happened. There was some kind of rally, etc., and I turned on the TV, and I thought that I saw my brother get shot.
On television?
Yeah. And so I called the police department there. And it took a while before it was him. And he was dead. And I had to call my mom.
You had to tell her?
Someone had to.
What do you remember about how you guys handled that and what was going through your head?
You know, I don't think one can remember it fully, or I'm not sure I entirely want to go there. I half remember her making a sound. I don't even know how to describe it. It was hard. I mean, death, I've experienced the death of my parents since then, and friends and whatever, and death is always hard, but when it comes kind of out of the blue, you feel it, and it's awful, but it's also surreal, and it sinks in stages.
What was the aftermath of it like for your family?
You know, my mother did not let me go to North Carolina afterwards. It was like I was going to stay with my dad, and she was scared. In retrospect, I wish I had just gone and seen my brother's body and been there, but I followed her wishes. At that point, our lives were so American dreamish. And then it was like the immigrant's nightmare. I do think the last few years I probably thought of him. It's not like I, you know, ever forgot him or anything, but I've thought of him more often, in the sense of there's just so many resonances to the present era.
Complicating this as well is the fact that not only was he murdered, but he was murdered by, you know, the most virulent racist, fascist groups in America, the
no
Ku Klux
question.
Klan and the American Nazi Party. Were you angry?
Oh, gosh. I mean, you know, it... Okay, I'm a psychologist here. Anger is a very active emotion. I think for a while I was too depressed to be angry. When I could finally feel anger and rage was when I was beginning to get healthier again. But I think at first, there's just a flattening of who you are. I don't know how to describe it, but just a total flattening. You don't have the energy to really be angry. And I'll be frank, at first I was angry at him. How could you put yourself in a situation? You were supposed to be there for me. But I also, it's important to put in perspective, and I know this is going to sound really, but that some of the people who were involved, and I'm not saying specifically the murderers, but were involved in the Klan, were exactly the kinds of people he was trying to help. And it's just so complicated.
Yeah. And I know this crystallized for you a lot after the Charlottesville protests, the Unite the Right rally and the counter-protests and the tragic death of one of the young activists. How did that feel to go through that, to observe it, and what did it bring up in you?
Oh, my God, I thought we had made some headway. I thought we were further along. I, you know, was living in more of a bubble than I thought I was. I study some of this, and so it's like you know it in your head how easily it is to get at, you know, the in-group versus out-group, the us versus them, the white versus black. It was very disturbing. It still is.
I guess to wrap up, do you have a particular memory that you want to share, something that is especially strong, even if it was a fleeting thing, that just kind of sticks in your memory banks about your brother?
Well, you know, I think that the thing that I would give my right and left arm for is one more kind of hug around the shoulders. You know, there was just a way in which he just put his arm around me that just felt like nothing could happen. The world was fine. And I, you know, I miss that. But I also want to say that I grew up in a family full of love. Lots of difficulties, you know, there were loud fights. You know, you can imagine some of the political fights in my home. But it was, and I think I learned from my brother that I was worthy of respect. You know, if I'm struggling with something or have a difficult decision, I can close my eyes, and I'm pretty sure what my brother would tell me. But that, you know, my brother's dead, and that's an amazing loss. But my brother's not lost to me. And I'm very, very lucky to have had him in my life as long as I did.